Good morning, fellow students, and welcome back to another episode of Legacy Weapon, your guide to the Legacy format. I'm Jamie Keller.
I'm Drew Walton.
And we return with our special guest, who we have let out of the basement where we kept him for the last week, Kenji.
Get the sleeve!
Oh, that makes me all kinds of happy. And that leads us into our next topic. Kenji is for anybody who was with us last episode, is a streamer, is a kind of, I think, a pillar in the Magic community, actually. We're very glad to have him on. But we'll come back to the sleeve later. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? Some people probably will listen to last episode. If not, you're probably going to be confused. Why are you jumping in midstream? But go ahead, you know, whatever order you like. So tell us more, the continued stories of Kenji.
Sure. So let's see. Been playing Magic for 16, 17 years or so. Took a break when I went to college. Started playing again after I graduated college. I graduated with degrees in anthropology and sociology, and I worked some odd-end jobs. During this time, I was watching people starting to stream. It was first Justin TV, and now it's called Twitch.tv. So I was watching people, and I'm like, hey, you know, these people are kind of interesting, but I think I can do this better, and I think I can do this more entertaining. So I started trying it out. Started very small, you know, like 5 viewers or something. I'm like, hey, I'm getting some more viewers. I kept at it. I kept persistent. Eventually, viewership was like at 100 viewers. And this was at a time when not many people streamed Magic. You know, there were a handful, maybe 5 to 10 tops streaming Magic at any given time. Nowadays, you can find 40, 50 people streaming Magic, something like that. Anyways, I then did something called the 1 year challenge, where I streamed every single day for a year straight. I think that was 3 years ago now, something like, I don't even know how long ago now, but I streamed Magic every single day for a year, and the following just grew and grew and grew. I think the consistency really helped, and you know, soon I was, I guess, quote unquote, big enough to where streaming was making more than my other job, so I quit that and I started doing it full time, and got a ton of other opportunities off of streaming. You know, I've been doing coverage for Wizards, recently been writing articles for them. Some other sites have hired me to do writing or videos, stuff like that. So it's just all exploded from that initial stream start.
That sounds perfect. Actually, that sounds wonderful.
Living the dream.
Now, I had a question. You know, everybody kind of says if you do something that you like for long enough, it becomes work. You know, the pros who spend the hours and hours just grinding away by themselves trying to perfect their decks for the Pro Tour or something, they say, you know, it's just as much work as anything else. How much do you think of it as the streaming that you do as work versus fun, now that it is the thing you do for your work? And why do you, even with... you know, with it being your work, why is it the thing that you choose to do? What do you like so much about it?
Sure. When it was just the streaming, you know, I didn't think it was nearly as much work as it is nowadays. But when I first started out, it was just all having fun and games. And turns out a lot of people like to watch me do it. So it was great. You know, it was the quote unquote dream job. As things progressed, I've definitely taken on a lot more responsibilities. It has become more of a job for sure. There are certainly days, and there were certainly days during the 1 year live stream challenge where I wake up and I'm like, oh God, I have to play Magic again. I have to stream Magic. You know, it's just like, ugh, I did this yesterday. And especially for me, because I would play 10 drafts a day or something. So, I don't know about you guys, but how many times do you draft a format, if you draft at all?
I mean, 2 or 3 times. Yeah.
Two or three times. Okay. Yeah. And so you assume that like the normal person that goes to maybe FNM every week, they draft a format, maybe what, 10, 20 times tops.
Right. Right. Like absolutely max. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a ton for most people, but I jam that into 2 days. And so, you know, it's like a week or two into a new format, and I'm like, you know, I've already seen this all. I'm doing the same exact thing. It's it feels like a job. It's more of a chore at that point. But you know, I've learned to love it. It's Magic after all. I get to play Magic every single day. You do new and exciting things. Sometimes you force strategies that are not very good, but they're entertaining. And when they work out, it's excellent for not only me, but for the viewers.
I did see somebody, I don't think it was you, I forget who it was, who tried to draft Battle of Wits in an 8th edition flashback they had a while back. Turns out that Magic Online will not let you add more than 99 of any single basic land.
No, that's not true. That's only at a given time. You can click 99, add it, and then do it again. I actually have a story where there was a streamer showdown. Somebody was playing a brain freeze deck as their only, and brain freeze was their only win condition. They beat me game one. I sideboarded into 1,200 lands. And one, the client lagged out tremendously for both of us. It took 5 seconds to register one click.
Oh God!
Two, they just scooped because they couldn't win. It's hilarious.
Like mathematically impossible to. Oh wow. That's great.
Yeah.
Oh, I now want to do that. Oh gosh, I now want to do that in real life too. We'd just go to the land station.
Exactly.
That's funny.
That is amazing. And you're talking about some of the things you got to do. I think it's just really cool. We're part of the Community Cup twice, right?
Actually, yeah, twice. The only person who's been on the community side of things twice, because there have been multiple people where they were on the community side and then they started work at Wizards and then they were on the Wizards side. But yeah.
So the Community Cup is something that they do every year for the last, 5, 10 more years?
Seven or 8 years or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's a team of Wizards employees versus a team of people. It used to be voted on this year. I think it was kind of hand selected by Wizards to kind of represent the different aspects of the community. Are any of the community folks, are they like pro tour pro players, or are they folks who are just otherwise involved with articles and stuff?
Oh no, they always have at least one or two professionals on the team. I was with, last time I went last year, it was Joel Larson, one of the more recent pro tour winners. Luis Scott Vargas has been on, of course. There have been, they generally bring at least one pro every year, and then there's a handful of other players. They produce video content, they stream, they do articles of some sort, yada, yada, yada. It's just a wide array of people that they bring on.
Is Yol's hair as gorgeous as it looks? We have to know.
Oh, even better.
Even better?
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty dreamy. I'm just going to say. And that, I really did enjoy. I was able to catch only some, unfortunately. Y'all are playing a lot, and between job and lack of internet access, my ability to stream the Community Cup was limited, but it was really fun. Y'all had a lot of very odd deck constraints on some of those things you were playing. What was your draft that you had to do?
Let's see, I think it was the creatureless deck. I just had to take no creatures, which was fine because it was a Legacy Cube draft, which means
totally
I could just
doable,
take all the Planeswalkers and all the removal spells, and my deck was awesome.
You could just draft Storm at that point, can't you?
I don't think they had Storm in this iteration, but they have had Storm before. They're just a ton of sweet things. One of our people could only take cards that were, they had to auto-pick the first pack, and then they could regularly draft the next two. A ton of different weird varieties of formats.
I think that's when we found out that the auto picker will pick low cost white cards, white creatures. So basically, just auto picked them a white weenie deck.
Yes, it was kind of awkward, and the Magic Online team were like, "Uh oh, this is not supposed to be like that."
The one that I watched getting drafted was romance movie titles or something like that. They had to pick whichever card they could justify as most fitting in a romance novel. And people were very upset about that he picked like Garrick, and then later he said like no, Garrick's the male love interest who gets turned around by the end because he's rough and everything.
That was right.
You have somebody over your shoulder and you get to argue your picks. I remember when they brought Sean Plott Day 9 a few years ago, he was really adamant because I think he had this similar draft one. He was really adamant about some cards that were just very good but didn't have any theme to the romance or whatever their storyline was.
Mm. Well, and you successfully won. Has the community won every year?
Oh, no. We've, I've won every year that I've been on it.
Whoa.
2-0 undefeated.
2-0 undefeated, but there have been some losses. I think overall the community's up by 2 or 3 wins, but I'm not certain on that.
Okay. So that sounds really great. And you were talking about doing coverage for Wizards. So beyond the streaming that you do and the articles, I know that you've started up basically your own content website, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Let's see. They first asked me to do coverage for the Magic Online Championship Series. I guess it was kind of fitting because they said, you know, they wanted somebody that was well-versed with Magic Online, somebody who, I guess, streams a lot, something like that. And so they brought me on as like a sideline coverage reporter. It was during that event, actually, that Channel Fireball reached out and said, hey, we're looking for people to do coverage for Grand Prix Vegas, the second one. Which was Modern Masters, and I'm like, mm-hmm. Yeah, let's do it. You know, 10,000 people for that, and then a smattering of other Grand Prix after that, and some hopefully other coverage opportunities in the near future. It's been a wild ride.
You narrated 10,000 games. You're like Santa Claus. I don't know how you got around the room.
It was actually two separate GPs, but yeah, I was on one of the coverage teams.
Oh, you only had to narrate 5,000 games.
Okay, and then you know, a few buys, so 4,900 rounded. You know, it's easy.
Well, and that sounds really great. And starting up your own content site, I feel lucky that we found people who know how to host things in the first place. I know that websites are what Google takes me to, and that's about as much as I know. So that's impressive in its own right.
Yeah, and that's where a lot of the work is coming in these days. The streaming is, you know, definitely there. It's a necessity, but looking to branch out, looking to make Newmont Gaming kind of the home of everything Magic Online related.
So what you're saying is, you know, you got the hot mixtape, and then that was your big thing, but you're really trying to become a record producer now, and you're slowly doing both.
Yeah, man, I can't even touch them. They're on fire the whole time. It's just smoking.
So you talk about, you know, Magic Online. That's where you do your streaming, and you talked about, you know, kind of being a job. I definitely did log on at one point when you were 18 hours into a 24-hour live stream.
Oh yeah, I've done a handful of those now.
Oh boy,
you were still winning, but you looked a little tired. I'm not gonna lie.
Actually, historically, my 24-hour streams have been very, very kind to me. Like, I run really well. I don't necessarily play really well, but I run really well. There was a time I tried to do a 36-hour stream, though. It was awful. I called it quits after, I think, hour 28 because I was just losing so much, and it was not fun at that point. Plus, I was dead tired.
Yeah. I've been up for 36 hours before, and I know how that feels. I would not have wanted to try to do anything remotely competitive toward the end of that. That's
yeah,
miserable.
Like Magic is a very thought-provoking game, right? So you just, right. Like, my brain is fried at that point. It's...
Yeah.
Yeah, the only 36-hour thing I can ever think of is, I told you I have a daughter? Yeah. Mm-hmm. It took a while for her to be born, so that was a fun one. I cannot imagine trying to be competitive at the end of that.
Well, your wife, period. I think, had more of the burden there.
Probably.
She was. Well, I mean, if I can get her on a Magic Online, she'll do a 40-hour stream and think nothing of it. I'm sure.
Probably.
Just fine for her.
She won't be having to be drugged up and in pain the whole time.
I was chugging espresso and taking naps. I don't know about you, but did you try that for your stream? That might have gotten you there.
I have a routine. It's always coffee. There's always a pizza that I order. There's always mm-hmm. energy drinks and then water at some point and then crash. And
if partway through you said, I'm going to just take a dive on this next draft, I'm just going to sleep through it and it can auto loss. How many people do you think would watch you sleep for 2 hours?
people have definitely slept on stream before when they're doing these longer streams. Because I'm obviously not the first person to do these long streams. And
sure.
Viewership is actually surprisingly high.
considering nothing is happening. Yeah.
We're moving into the Truman Show areas right now where you just get to watch people sleep all night long.
It is.
That's a, It's a little odd.
People want to know what happens. You know, is he going to make it? Is he going to wake up? What happened? Is he just going to lay there for the next 5 hours?
Well, he auto-picked a great weenie deck, and he's letting it go to waste. Now, with Magic Online, we talked about that a bit in the prior episode. What do you like about Magic Online? What do you not like about Magic Online? What are you looking forward to them someday improving about just the experience on there?
Ooh. There are a ton of good things. I mentioned some of these in the previous episode. You know, you always have easy magic access at the touch of your hand. Nowadays, you don't have to commit 3 or 4 hours like you would at a Friday Night Magic event, or if you go to a Grand Prix, you know, 10 plus hours or something like that. You can just play a quick match in, you know, 10, 15 minutes if you really want to in like the casual room, or with leagues, you can play a quick hour-long match tops. So if you don't have much time to set aside, it's really convenient for that. You can play formats that are weird, interesting, formats that, you know, might not necessarily be supported with your normal group of players, whether that be at your LGS or your just group of friends or whatever. It's really convenient, really easy. It's great for learning the steps of the game. I remember when I first picked up Magic Online, I was not at all near familiar with the phases of the game as I am now. You know, untap, upkeep, draw, blah, 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 blah. All of these phases, all these little interactions that really make a difference after you start playing online.
Mm-hmm.
As far as downside, there are certainly plenty. There are bugs. You know, there are sometimes cards that don't work as intended. The client has been very, very much known for its use of memory. It starts lagging. It sometimes crashes.
Now, you mentioned bugs. I recently saw a couple articles about this. What is your take on either in draft or something? If you know a bug exists, how much is it your duty to avoid taking advantage of that bug versus if it's there, you're able to play with it kind of thing? What is your take on that?
Oh, I just avoid it at all costs. I mean, it's not worth it, right? You can file for compensation if anything that happens. And you can even file for compensation if you win with a bug. They are very, very good about reimbursing you for something, you know, that was out of your control. Even if the client crashes, you know, they will happily reimburse if you can message them and show them, you know, I was in this draft and I crashed during pick 5. You know, they're always happy to help.
Yeah, there's some cards which just don't work, I know, or don't work right. Like right now, they sent out on Twitter a, please don't misuse Myr Superion,
yes.
Please. apparently, Myr Superion is a 2-mana, like 7/7, but you can only pay for it with mana that comes from creatures. Except apparently on Magic Online right now, you can pay for it with basic lands. So it's just a 2-mana 7/7, something like that.
5/6.
Yeah, it's a 5/6, yeah.
Yeah.
But you'll get a warning. And it's kind of a shame because there's at least one deck I've seen that it goes in, which would love to do it. And I guess those people can play it as long as they just avoid ever
playing it improperly. Tapping
their basic land by mistake, I guess. But stuff like that. Or what is it? Panglacial Worm or something that...
Casting it from your library, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. I recently saw in one of their updates where they just said, like, oh, Panglacial Worm, why are you so difficult? Like, this is their official statement, where they basically say, you know what, everybody, this just doesn't work, and it's just too far down our list. We're not going to fix it soon. Sorry. And that basically was their response, which, on the one hand, that's really disheartening, but on the other hand, eh. I can understand that being hard to code and them having priorities, and it's kind of refreshing.
There's
having them,
nothing else that does anything just remotely like that. I mean, it's by far, maybe it's not the weirdest card in Magic, but it's definitely one of the more unique cards, and it sees fringe play in Commander. We'll go on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it's stuff like that just kind of doesn't work the way it's supposed to. And some things that sound like they'd be easy to do, and I understand why they're difficult. I heard, I forget who it was, talking about the card design, where, you know, there's the cards from Theros that say, creatures your opponents control lose flying and can't gain flying. Apparently, there's no way to code that. And so what they had to do, they had to go through every card with flying and add in it that card's code, if X is on the field, you don't gain flying anymore, something like that. Ridiculous. But to the extent that they, when they, the new card, what's it called? Attach the mortal form or whatever that card is in the Gatewatch, the kill the Eldrazi one that makes them lose indestructible.
Yeah.
Oh, Bond of Mortality or something.
Yep, Bond of Mortality. Apparently they wrote it as loses indestructible and cannot gain indestructible. And they said, oh, this shouldn't be hard to code. You did it already. And so we did it by manually going through the entirety of every card, pretty much. And then they said, oh, we'll just make it loses indestructible. We don't really care about not being able to gain it. So it's interesting how even there's a little bit of feedback from Magic Online into what cards get printed. That's the only one I've heard of, and that's barely a functional change. So I'm not especially concerned about it, but it's interesting how the two interplay with each other. Is there anything else you think that's especially weird about Magic Online worth noting?
It's not a social construct, right? People aren't
cordial.
People aren't happily chatting with one another. In fact, I would say that chatting with your opponent is, I wouldn't say discouraged, but like people generally just don't want to talk to you unless you're in a clan or something and you're talking to the clan or you're in like the casual room, something like that. People are much more inclined to talk. But if you're in like a more competitive environment,
you're on the clock. Yeah.
Yeah. Generally people don't want to talk to you.
I've seen there's even an account online called like Salty Losers that just posts screenshots of, especially not cordial people,
sure.
which I hear get reported, and the Wizards actually monitors that and takes those kinds of things seriously when they kind of step over the line too much. Some of them, though, some of these people, oh, the salt is so real. And on some of them, you know, it's just unfortunate, uncomfortable. Some of them, though, it's just so delicious. They're just so grumpy, and they're just taking it out in all the wrong ways, which, you know, I don't like reveling in people's misery. But when they're a jerk about it, all of a sudden their misery becomes delicious.
Oh, I love it, especially when they're doing it in front of, you know, 1,500 or 2,000 people, and everybody can laugh along with me.
Yeah,
right.
How are you going to tell somebody whose name is LSV on Magic Online, or their name is Numat Benami on Magic Online? How are you not going to know, and you're going to tell them, you're a bad player playing a bad deck, Luxack, gosh. How are you going to do that? How are you not going to notice the name of your opponent?
It's always so nice. Oh, man. Everybody, you know, everybody in chat types their PJ salts, which gives this emoticon of a salt can, and it's just great.
Well, that is very fun. Now, you talk about unusual formats. Do you know, is every sanctioned format playable on Magic Online?
Technically, in the sense that you can build decks in free form where there's no structure, and then, you know, if you've agreed to play like Canadian Highlander or something, then you can play each other. But supported, Pauper, Modern, Standard, Vintage, Legacy, Commander, Momir. I mean, there's a ton of versions of Magic that you can exclusively play online too, which is nice. But the main ones are definitely online.
Can I join a Prismatic League?
Which one's Prismatic?
No one knows. That's the point.
It is still listed on Gatherer, so it's an officially supported format as far as some cards being banned in Prismatic.
You have to be in all five colors. You have to have some minimum number, I think, of colors of cards of each color. I don't know.
It predates Extended.
I think I remember seeing Prismatic on Magic Online a long time ago, but it's not there currently.
Okay, well,
I wonder why.
Both Prismatic players are sad about that.
But I mean, again, if both Prismatic players know each other, they can just build their deck in freeform and play.
Sure, right.
Okay. Well, good. And it is kind of fun. You're talking about teaching the steps and the triggers. I know, have you played Duels of the Planeswalkers?
I have, yes.
Okay. For anybody who's played that, because I've played that, you know, when it came out on iPhone, which it's a little scrunched of an interface trying to play that on iPhone. But it works. How would you really compare the two for somebody who's used to one or the other?
Oh, it's Magic Online is basically chess to Duels of the Planeswalkers checkers. If that makes sense. Okay. Yeah, Duels does a good job of teaching you the basics. Magic mm-hmm. Online is going to take you a few, well, a large way away from the basics into the more, not professional, but more skilled territory, I guess.
Okay. Yeah, they both seem to do a good job of kind of clarifying for people when you have priority, when you're able to do things, and stuff that after a while becomes second nature. But, you know, I can remember back to when we thought banding was so overpowered, we banned it it was not allowed in any of our games because we didn't understand the rules and we thought it did something that it did not actually do.
Banding is very good. Whenever a format comes online for a flashback draft and there's banding, I take all the banding cards because nobody knows how to work and I just abuse the heck out of it. And, you know, they attack with some creature, I block with my banding creature and some other, you know, you can kill this and it's so great.
Yeah.
Well, ours was even better. We didn't realize you could double block except with banding. So in addition to all the other benefits banding gives, we thought that was the only way you were allowed to double block. which is why we thought it was so overpowered. We just said, all right, fine. Erase the word banding from every card. No one is allowed to play with banding.
Gotcha.
So that we were good players back in the day.
Adventurer's Guild is a real great card now.
Hey, I bought one of those for 25 cents and I am proud of it. It is the worst card that I own.
Oh boy.
One other thing. That was actually the last one that I had. Comeback. Tell us about the sleeve. Tell us about that. I know about that. Tell the other people about that. Tell Drew.
Drew does not get this joke.
Oh, so, I couldn't tell if you did or not. You kind of laughed along, but it sounded half-hearted, Drew.
Yeah, well, I'm good at faking, I guess. Anyway, tell me, Kenji, what's the deal?
So getting the sleeve is when you open a money card on Magic Online. Say I open Rashad and Port Online, which is worth, you know, 100 plus tickets or something. Getting the sleeve as in if I'm at a Friday Night Magic and I open an expedition, you know, you want to get the sleeve, put it in the sleeve immediately because it's worth so much money.
Right, right, right. But it's because you don't have to sleeve your online cards. I get it. All right.
Yes, it's pretty good.
Yes.
And at the Community Cup is when the first expedition was opened. Is that, am I remembering right?
From non-WotC members. Yeah, I think so. I think it was a hollowed
fountain. But before it was available to everybody else, was it after an event? I don't remember now.
There was one open at the Community Cup, so.
Okay. So yeah, that's where that came from. I only half understood the joke there, Drew. You were only twice as clueless as me, not infinitely more clueless than me. There you go. You feel
it's
better
par
about
for
that
the
now.
Course.
Well, but before we move on, I did want to thank our sponsor. As always, we are hosted on GatheringMatch.com, which is a great source for articles about really every format. I'm going to go check them now and see if they have anything on Prismatic. I'm going to guess probably not, but
almost
if anybody does.
You can always check out the Drafting with Newmont series.
Really? You could? What's that?
I mean, it's a series of draft videos that I do on Gathering Magic.
That sounds wonderful. I've actually watched one of those. They're really good. We'll link those in the show notes below. We also have a special sponsor just for this episode, and that is Ongoing Investigation Incorporated. Unfortunately, I apologize, but I'm not able to comment on this. So, we actually have a second sponsor. The second sponsor for this episode is Fell of the Nightclub. Fell of the Nightclub is the hot spot downtown on Ravnica, looking for you and all your friends to come down and party hard. Their event this Thursday night is called Bump and Grind in the Night, and it is for you and all your friends to come on down and get jiggy with Jace. Come on down to Fell of the Nightclub.
Yep.
Moving on. I did want to talk about.
I thought you were using applause.
There you go.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. We had talked last episode about legacy leaks on Magic Online because that's one of the reasons why we reached out to you in particular is because of your experience with Magic Online and our utter inexperience with Magic Online. in addition to the Legacy Leagues and the fact that you can just play in the casual rooms, they started a new bi-monthly tournament. Is that right?
Called what? What? Who?
Twice a month they have a special Legacy tournament that's on a Saturday, I think.
Okay, they do. They have like Vintage and Legacy. I never joined these, so I'm about as knowledgeable right now as you are on those.
Oh, okay. Well, then I've got it open in front of me on this, so I will talk. Oh, I have regained my guru status. I will teach you all masses about this. So they do something called the Legacy Challenge. We talked last time about how Legacy Leagues is a little bit of a flatter pay scale, where if you go 3-2, you get your money back. If you go 0-5, you still get kind of some pity points, but you win some prizes still. Mm-hmm. The Legacy Challenge is, I understand, twice a month. The second Saturday of every month, and it costs $25 to play. The prizes go to the first 32 people. They all win their entry fee back at the first 32, and then the prizes are very top heavy and are heavy into specific cards that you get. For example, if you win first place, you get you get 250 play points, which is, you get your entry fee back, but you also get a Rashadan Port, which is worth a lot, an Infernal Tutor, a Food Chain, a Dark Depths, a Batter Skull, an Unmask, a Cunning Wish, a Chrome Mox, a Daze, which we talked about being shockingly expensive, and one of every dual land. So that's for first place. And then on down, you get other large piles of cards for first through eighth. Now, I'm not sure, and if you haven't played it, you might not know how popular these really are. It always struck me as a little odd that the prize structure doesn't change as more players join. If you're in a five game league, well, if more players come, more prizes go up because it's more leagues, more games, more people. This one, if they have 33 people or 3,300 people, it's the same amount of prizes that are given out. And that always struck me as a little odd, but I assume that would just kind of add to the top heaviness and add to the competitive nature, where only people who expect to be in that top five will play. Is that kind of how you'd expect that to play out?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, very frequently you see Eric Froelich, Louis Scott Vargas, and Randy Buehler, they're always posting on Twitter about joining these events, especially the Vintage Challenge. It's the Vintage and Legacy Challenge, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's so right. They're always posting on Twitter about the decks that they're using, and they always do very, very well.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that makes a lot of sense. If you can expect to be in the top 30, well, then you're going to make your money back, and then maybe a whole lot more. I'm probably not going to pay $25 to join in an event that I may not be the top 30 Legacy players in the entire world, perhaps. You never know. Maybe I am. Who knows? I could be. But I will probably stick to leagues where I can pretty reasonably I can have as a reasonable goal going 3-2. That sounds a lot more reasonable than being number one against Louis Scott Vargas and all those types of folks. Well, then beyond that, I wanted to talk about the Legacy that you have played, because I know that you do play Legacy, and you have a specific deck that you like most. Why don't you tell us about that?
Sure. I really love the all land. No, I'm just kidding. I don't like that deck. I don't.
Lands. Ugh.
12 post, actually. 12 post.
Yeah. The other lands deck.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's kind of a lands deck.
You might have the second highest land count of any deck in Legacy.
That's probably true. My deck list right now has 28. This deck was...
That's a lot.
Yes. This deck was, or at least as far as I'm concerned, pioneered by my buddy, maybe not created by, but pioneered by my buddy John Kasari. And he's always shipping me these sweet 12 post brews. I used to play this deck in Modern when Modern was originally a thing, or when it first came out. Mm-hmm. And that deck was mm-hmm. broken. That deck was insane.
Was that banned like in a month or
yes,
something like that?
It was. It okay. was. But the time that you could play it, oh man, did it feel good.
now for the audience, this is again an intermediate level episode with a guest. So we're not going to go through a full deck. We're not going to go through card by card what 12 post is. But can you give us a, you know, 25,000 foot view of what is 12 post? Mostly, you know, why do you like it? What is it good for? How does it play?
Sure. So as the name implies, you're running many, many posts. There's a land called Cloud Posts, Cloud Post, which enters the battlefield tapped, and it adds a colorless mana to your mana pool for each locus on the battlefield. So there are Glimmer Posts, which are locusts. There are Vesuvas, which can copy your Cloud Posts and whatnot. This deck tends to ramp out very fast, very quick mana, and then you end up either looping an Emrakul with Karakas and attacking, yada yada, or Ulamog or Ugin, just take care of big things. It's very good at playing very big creatures pretty darn quickly.
So, I mean, that sounds a lot like Tron in Modern, for anybody who plays Modern. Does it kind of play out similarly, or is it just a completely different experience?
It's actually very, very similar to Tron, I would say. You have four Sensei's Divining Top to find your cards, four crop rotations, which are just great in the deck. You know, you can get your Cloud Posts, or you can get your one of bullets, like the Tabernacle at Pendril Vale, which online, I know we were talking about this earlier, the Tabernacle is like $1 online or something like that. You know, you have your Dark Depths and your Thespian Stage Wombo combo that you can search for. Bajuka Bog right. is insane versus all the Dredge decks, and you can instant speed it with crop rotation, yada, yada, yada. You have four Primeval Titans. The deck is just awesome.
So how quickly does the deck usually win?
Oof. Usually,
Or at least get its big thing down. How quickly do you expect to you know, land an Ugin or an Emrakul or something? Turn 2, 3, 4?
You can definitely win quickly, but that's generally through the Dark Depths Thespian Stage combo, which is, you know, you use Thespian Stage to copy Dark Depths. You sacrifice the Dark Depths version, keep Thespian Stage, which now has zero counters, and you get a quick 20/20 flying indestructible. I'm assuming people know what these things do, but so I'm not going to...
I run that in my Maverick deck, which is what we just talked about on our last episode before...
Previous episode, yeah.
Perfect. So, Dark Depths, Thespian Stage is probably your quickest win condition, but I would generally say that games go a lot longer.
Okay. Does it have things like Chalice of the Void or something to slow down decks then, to kind of keep the quick decks under control?
Yes, absolutely. You're running Moment's Peace, which is actually very, very good versus a lot of decks. You got Trinisphere, which you can cast on turn 2 just from Cloud Post into Glimmer Post. Mm-hmm. You have two Pithing Needles in the main, two Relic of Progenitus in the main. Pithing Needle, you generally name Wasteland because Wasteland is very, very good versus you. There's Thorns in the sideboard. You have Glacial Chasm that you can crop rotate for, which just buys you a ton of time. Leyline with Sanctity. Just a ton of nice sideboard options to go along with your main deck package of hate cards.
So instead of hate bears, you're basically hate rocks.
Kind of, yeah. So hate rocks and then Giant Eldrazi and Ugin.
Now, how would that compare then against mud decks?
Those are the artifact decks, right?
Yeah,
the ones that basically are hate rocks, but not the 12 post backup.
I think it's a lot more fun. I think it's also a little bit. That's hard to say.
Seems like it might be faster and stronger just because of being able to ramp so much. It seems like a mud plays the controlling role more strongly and purposefully, and yours is kind of the ramp control, which kind of turns into aggro control by the sound of it.
I think the mud deck can definitely come out a little bit faster. If you have a really good draw, sure, 12 post can do that. But generally, you know, you're not doing too many things in the middle of the game. You have a lot of early game plays just set up, and then you're kind of waiting until you can land a Primeval Titan or a big creature.
Because your big mana stuff comes in tapped for the most part, and it's not like you're running Amulet of Vigor or something. So you have to wait, right?
Exactly. So, you know, Cloud Post into Cloud Post, but then you only have two mana and your other one's in tapped. It's generally pretty slow, and that's why it's not a tier one deck at all, but it's a very fun deck if you like playing big things.
Okay. Saying it's not a tier one deck, would you still think of it as like a tier one and a half or tier two? How competitive do you think it is?
It depends. Is your metagame mono miracles, because then you have a really good shot. Otherwise...
there's been a lot of miracles lately.
Sure, sure. But you hate Wastelands, which a lot of decks run. You hate Force of Wills, which a lot of decks run. You just hate counters in general, which a lot of decks run.
You mentioned Wasteland. On Magic Online, is Wasteland still ridiculously expensive? Because I remember, at least before they did Tempest Remastered, it was so expensive that I heard just don't worry about the Death and Taxes matchup, because no one plays Death and Taxes, because Wasteland was like $200 or something stupid like that.
Wasteland's gone down. I think it peaked at maybe like 100. It's at 50-ish right now or something. Yeah, okay. They've reprinted it a few times. You know, Expedition now is still 50 tickets or something. The Tempest version is probably like 70.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I am really just waiting to hear the horror story of, you know, a kid who opens up Wasteland and Expedition. Somebody else opens Strip Mine Expedition. It's like, oh, wow, Strip Mine is so much better than Wasteland. I'd love to trade you, please. Oh, poor kid. I hope nobody lets that happen.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about what more would you want people to know about you? What more? Tell us some other fun story if you got it.
Oh man! Well, if
I know, I'm just going to throw something wide open at you and see where you go with it. Run.
If people know my stream, they know that I'm 48 years old, which is entirely true. I'm definitely not in my 20s. So I've been playing Magic since I was like 30 or something. It's a running joke on my stream. Sorry. Yeah.
So we're on audio. You could be any age you want right now.
Oh, that's true. Oh yeah.
I know.
Oh great. Story.
You had me going there. I was like,
You had me looking at the tiny little Skype picture and being like, you don't look that old. You don't look that old at all. But
yeah. Yeah. Anyways, it's a running joke on my stream that I'm super old, and I always get Is he really 48? Along with it or something?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Yeah. Wow. Stories, man. I don't know. That's tough. Let's see.
Tell us about the first Community Cup you were on. Who were you on that one with?
Oh gosh. Okay. I was with Melissa DeTora. She was on the community side.
Oh.
Yeah, she was on the community side that year, and then. Last year, I played against her, which was kind of funny. I was with Jan Vandervet, also known as DZYL on Twitch. Shoot, who was the pro? Oh gosh, I don't even remember. That was so long ago.
Yeah. Oh no, that was the other time I was on the Community Cup. Now who can remember all these Community Cup appearances?
Dude, that was like 4 years ago or something, man. I just it's
actually funny you say that. Melissa was she played and judged sometimes at Star City Games. She taught me basically how to play Commander and how to draft.
Nice.
Back in the day, yeah. Huh. So she probably wouldn't remember me. We weren't exactly close, but she was really nice and fun to play against. A little better than they will say. just a smidge.
She does have a Pro Tour Top 8 to her name, so I don't think anybody would fault you.
Well, yeah. And you know, when you add her and mine together, we've got one Pro Tour Top 8. we each contribute to that.
Oh, shoot. Right. Me and her, too. Wow, that works out perfectly.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
The percentage of Top 8 sharing is just going lower and lower.
Yeah. Right. Can I get on this, too?
My shame goes deeper, because I basically just stole a joke from Tosh, from Tosh.0, so that my shame now knows no bounds.
Yeah, really. That's... Ugh. Yeah.
I did, if there's something else you can think of right now, I wanted to talk a little bit more, following up what we did before, Shadows over Innistrad, because I'm really excited about it, and for a variety of reasons. One is, spoilers are still coming out, and I think you had a second spoiler that we didn't get to talk about, and another is a card which I expect to see in Legacy, and then I wanted to see if you have any other things you expect to see Legacy play. So what was your other spoiler, since it's fresh off the presses?
Sure, sure. It was on theme with the Gold Knight Castigator Angel. It's called Angelic Purge, 2 colorless and a white. It's a sorcery. As an additional cost to cast Angelic Purge, you sacrifice a permanent, exile target artifact, creature, or enchantment, and it's a common.
Now, With no real joke here, can this find a home in either Commander or Modern with hatching plans? Because I've been trying to make a hatching plans deck work since original Ravnica, and I don't think it ever will, but it's always in the back of my mind whenever I see something like this.
Oh, Commander for sure. Commander, yeah, I mean, this is a great, I mean, you have tons of great things to sacrifice. I think Academy Rector probably comes to the top of my mind.
Yeah.
That you can sacrifice with Angelic Purge. In Modern, I'm not very good at theorizing this type of thing, but
I tried to pair Urtai the Corrupted with hatching plans. I've tried to go deep on this, and nothing ever even is halfway decent. But maybe Urtai can be a commander someday for me. We'll see.
I think Angelic Purge is probably a lot better than Urtai at doing that kind of job.
Yeah.
But Urtai's awesome.
I never said he wasn't. I'm just saying it's less feasible for Urtai to do so.
But there's two of him.
That's my answer. My hands are up in the air. I know you can't see him.
Your answer is actually correct. But I'll keep dreaming. The one card, though, that I wanted to talk about for Legacy is a strict upgrade to a card that already sees Legacy play. So guaranteed this is going to see Legacy play. Now, we haven't talked about it yet because it's not a staple. The card that I'm talking about that already sees Legacy play is Envelop. So, Drew, tell us what Envelop is.
It's an instant. It's a blue mana counter target sorcery. Yep.
That sounds not very exciting, actually, since sorcery is so narrow, but
I mean, it's a sideboard card, and there are a lot of decks this is good against. Yeah. Right. So the new card is exactly the same thing, except that it has Delirium, which means you have to have four different cards, card types in your graveyard. And if you do, then in addition to countering the sorcery, you now get to search your opponent's hand, library, and graveyard for any number of copies of the spell you countered, and you get to exile them all.
Okay. So it's not exactly a hot take that this is going to see play in Legacy in those few sideboard slots. It's easy to just take out Envelop and put this in because, you know, sometimes you're going to get the bonus, and when you don't, it's exactly the same as Envelop.
Right.
Do you think that that's a substantial enough improvement that it will see more play than it does now, or really just the people who play it will be marginally pleased?
Me or Kenji?
Either of you, whoever's got a hot take.
I go with going to just replace it, sit pretty much in the same number of spots. No huge change to the metagame.
Yeah, I don't remember ever seeing Envelop, honestly. I mean, I guess I played 12 posts, so nobody would bring that in.
Right.
I'll say I play Elves, which I'm not sure somebody would bring it in themselves, but, you know, counter my natural order after I've sacked a guy, that burns a little bit. And I've still yet to ever see Envelop. So I know for a fact that it does see sideboard play, but it's fringe enough.
It's pretty fringe.
Probably.
And I mean, the decks that would play it would be like Delver, and they've pretty much only got four card types in their whole 75. And most of the decks where you would bring this in to counter a sorcery are not killing your creatures very often, which means you're probably not going to hit Delirium. So, because that's the only way you would ever get a creature in the graveyard, and all you've got are lands, instant sorceries, creatures. So,
yeah. It doesn't seem like a Legacy staple, so I assume the decks that have Envelop are just going to replace it, and there's not going to be too much else.
Yeah.
I think you're probably right, but I did want to mention it, since it will at least exist. I will try to pick up maybe a foil copy of it just to have at some point, because, you know, maybe I'll build one of those decks someday and want it to look nice. Now, Kenji, you don't know my Modern graveyard pet deck. Drew, can this go in my Modern graveyard pet deck? I get Delirium every single game.
I mean, it's not terrible in there, but
it's pretty terrible.
I think you have better things to be doing.
It's pretty terrible. It's moderately terrible, I'll say.
You're in four colors. Like, you have a lot of cards that you can play, and most of them are better than this. So
I cut the fifth color already.
Oh, well.
I mean, what more do you want from me?
Right. So I have a card that I think might see some play in Legacy, which is Traverse the Ovenwald.
Ooh.
It's a green one green mana, it's a sorcery. It says search your library for a basic land, put it in your hand. But then if you have Delirium, you instead search your library for a creature or any land and put it in your hand. So I don't know, but there's a deck called Sultai Depths, which is basically just like turbo Dark Depths combo, which wants to try to find Dark Depths, wants to find Thespian Stage, wants to find Vampire Hexmage as fast as possible. It's running Sylvan Scrying, usually. And it seems like this might be a card. I mean, if they can hit Delirium, and that's, I think that's the question, is whether they can hit Delirium. But if they can, I think this might be pretty solid.
But yeah, you're right, that's the question. Do you have an answer? Because it sounds like the answer would be
so,
no.
I think as the deck is presently constructed, the answer is that it's probably too hard. I mean, they have maybe... sometimes they at least run some Lotus Petals, so that's an extra card type. If they've got a Vampire Hexmage in the... That's the only creature, though, and if that's in the graveyard, they've probably already won the game. But they might need to do some tweaking. But it seems like it might be the sort of thing that could maybe punch that deck up a half a tier. I've also thought about playing it in Maverick because I run like six card types in there, and it's kind of, if you have Delirium, it's like a strictly better Green Sun Zenith, because you can find any creature and then you can just cast it, or you can get,
yeah.
And we're running the Dark Depths combo too. We can find that.
I'm gonna make the patented Tenji noise now and just go. Yeah.
Ultimately, I think
my
the answer is
a similar angle.
Yeah.
I mean, this is gonna go in my EDH deck that wants to, you know.
Yeah.
Go find Gaia's Cradle, but I think I'm gonna stick with Green Sun Zenith for now.
I think that's the issue. I really think that Delirium as a mechanic is probably just not going to be easy to turn on in Legacy, and so a lot of these cards that are theoretically very powerful if you have it are probably going to turn out to be underwhelming in Legacy in practice.
I think the only time you're going to get Delirium is if you are self mill or dredge or something like that, and the Legacy dredge decks have better things to be doing than anything we've seen so far.
By the time everyone is hearing this whole set has probably been released. at this point, we have half the spoilers, so who knows? Maybe there's all kinds of crazy bonkers Delirium cards out there.
That's why I took my real hot take on Thing in the Ice for last week.
Right.
Because I'm still getting flack on that one of people saying, no, it's not good, and I am confident they're wrong. It started off at $1, and it's already up to like $20, and I'm not going to buy it $20, but if I can pick up some of those for, you know, $3 to $5, I'm going to get a whole pile of them.
Yeah, well, good luck with that.
Well, we'll see. There's going to be a lot of these opened.
It's true.
Do you have any other cards in particular that you're excited about? Maybe for Legacy, maybe not, that you want to talk about?
So
Kenji?
Oh, me?
Drew's here all the time. I don't really care. I mean, what did he just say? Uvenwald tracker tactics.
Dude,
traversing.
I mean, not for Legacy, but Triskaidekaphobia, man.
I was going to shout out that card. It's the coolest card they've ever printed.
I have challenged myself to find all the 13s on that card. I have come up with 9 in the artwork and 3 probably in the text.
Yeah.
I'm not sure where it might be a stretch, though, because it's like there's 13 words if you don't count the numerical 1 and 13.
Yeah.
Or the casting cost is 1 black and 3 colorless, so that's 13. And I forget who it was, but somebody on Twitter said it would be funnier if they put in exactly 12 to leave us doing what I'm doing and trying to find the 13th, because it's driving me nuts a little bit, which I think is kind of the point. Reminds me of that Jim Carrey movie, 23 or whatever.
Yeah.
Let's see. I think somebody posted on Reddit the 13-13s, but I won't spoil them for you.
Ooh, okay. Are there more than 9 in the arc, do you know? I think I found all 9 in the artwork.
3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Yes.
Okay. All right, I got all the other ones.
I think you got all the artwork ones.
Well, some people started going real deep. They're like, well, if you count the TM and the trademark as not real words, there are 13 letter T's on the card. I'm like, oh gosh, oh gosh, they've gotten to us. They've gotten turned us all insane.
Well, 13 starts with a T. That's not totally insane. I mean, anyway.
That is one of the instances that they list on Reddit. So maybe, maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, it is? That they're counting that? Okay. Yeah. Well, sure. Maybe. I was actually really sad that it wasn't like art number 13 or anything like that.
Yeah.
But
stupid rules of white cards having to come first.
Yeah, I know. Well, I think we are out of time, and this was a lot of fun. So why don't you tell everybody how they can get in touch with you, Kenji?
Sure. You can always find me streaming over at twitch.tv/NumotTheNummy. NumotTheNummy. I know that name is not normal, so I'll spell it out. You can also find me on Twitter under the same name, NumotTheNummy. And I just launched a new site, NumotGaming.com. You can check that out, and we have some forms that you can fill out to message us should you choose to do so. Yeah, those are probably the easiest ways.
And I just realized after two episodes of calling you Kenji, should I call you Kenji? Should it be Mr. Nummy?
Num-nums?
Num-nums.
You can call me whatever you like. How about that?
That is a dangerous...
No, I'm leaving it there. You can call me whatever you like.
I'm going to have to think about this for a while. Sorry, before I close out. Drew, do you have a band card of the day?
I do. The band card of the day today will be Mishra's Workshop, which is... It's a land, and you tap it, and it adds 3 colorless mana to your mana pool, which you can only spend to play artifact spells, and that's it.
Well, it's a good thing they never printed any good artifacts in the course of the game,
right?
Or anything like that.
Yeah,
3 mana is a lot of mana.
It's a ton of mana for a land that comes into play untapped and. Yeah, it doesn't deal you damage or anything. Well, regardless, it's just, I don't think any land. There's like Lotus Veil, I think, taps for 4, but you just sacrifice a bunch of lands when that comes into play. So, yeah.
Scorched Ruins, man. It's on the reserve.
That's the one. Scorched Ruins is the one I was thinking of, not Lotus Veil, yeah.
I think it's very telling that in Vintage, Shops is one of the best decks, and this is basically the reason why the deck exists,
yeah.
Just because it can run these.
Right.
In my very brief foray into, you know, tooling around with proxied, playtest carded, vintage, shops is what I was playing with. And it, without me even knowing the format, my win rate was, I mean, it was close to 50-50 with the deck, just because the deck's really good and relatively forgiving, honestly. So, being able to make 6 mana on turn 2 is really, really good.
Yeah. You can do some broken stuff. Well, yeah, you can make more than that because you've got Moxen too. It's Vintage is a silly format, but it's yeah,
tis a silly format.
Yes, but yeah, Mishra's Workshop is the most broken card in the most broken deck in any currently actually sanctioned format. So,
That would probably be the tier one deck in Legacy if that were legal, just because, I mean, heck, with just all the consistency you can do. I mean, look, Eldrazi's doing pretty well.
Eldrazi might be the best deck in Legacy right now.
No, it's not. It didn't even make it in the top 8 the last one. It had like 2 in the top 16. It's fine. It's calmed down a lot. Eldrazi's fine.
We'll see.
Still, it's doing that good on relatively inefficient creatures just because it can make 2 mana out of a land.
Right.
If you can make 3 mana out of land and pick any artifact, oh gosh, that would be the number one deck.
I mean,
and I think Shatterstorm would be the number one red card.
Yeah, turn 1 Chalice of the Void or Trinisphere and things are kind of over. It's bad news.
So. All right. That is enough of that. If anyone wants to reach me, I am Jamie7Keller at gmail.com and on Twitter.
And I'm MTG Drew Walton at gmail.com.
You're the other person, Drew. You can do this.
I was waiting for Kenji, and I really forgot that he already did his thing. Yeah.
You can email the show directly at MTG Legacy Weapon on Twitter or legacyweaponpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for coming with us, and we will, until next time, let's have Kenji sign us out, actually.
Until next time, Chromanticore is your legacy weapon of
choice. Thank you.
Excellent. Thanks. Yeah, well, you know, we really didn't screw up much. It's a good thing that I screwed up, or we wouldn't have anything to put as the stingers.
We've got two episodes. I don't know how we'll spread that out.
Just half of it, and then, you know, you put the other half on there.
Come back next week for the rest of this joke.
You don't know how tempted I am to do that now.
Just chop it up, yeah.